This is Bob Decker, volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, with this week's Listener Beware. Today I'll be reading articles that appeared in AARP, the magazine, and Reader's Digest. Our first article from AARP, the magazine, was written by Laura Prochicka. It discusses federal and state databases that may help you to locate and claim funds from dormant accounts, pensions, bonds, or back wages. Your money, lost then found. A new federal database is designed to reunite people with old 401ks and pension plans. It's only one of several sites where you can find your wayward wealth. Uncashed checks and dormant accounts. Go to missingmoney.com to search 49 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico for unclaimed property that might be due you. Search for any of your assets in Hawaii by using the state's link to Hawaii's registry. Provided by the National Association of State Treasurers, the site catalogs assets such as uncashed checks from corporations, financial institutions, banks, insurance companies, and municipalities, along with the contents of inactive brokerage accounts and unclaimed safe deposit boxes. Pensions and 401ks. Search for lost or missing retirement funds at lostandfound.dol.gov, the U.S. Department of Labor's new Retirement Savings Lost and Found database. The nonprofit Pension Rights Center at pensionrights.org can connect you with free help if you, your company, or your pension plan is located in one of the 30 states served by the U.S. Administration for Community Living's Pension Counseling and Information Program. Visit pbgc.gov/workers-retirees on the website of the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation to find unclaimed benefits from private sector plans that have closed down. Back wages. If the Department of Labor can't find you after recovering unpaid wages you're due, you have 3 years to get in touch with the DOL and request your money. To see if you're owed any back pay, visit the Workers Owed Wages site at dol.gov/agencies/WHD/WOW. Savings bonds. At treasuryhunt.gov, operated by the U.S. Department of the Treasury, you can find out if you, or a loved one who has died, have a U.S. savings bond or other U.S. Treasury security for which proceeds have not been paid. You can also use this to track down missing interest payments on Treasury securities. You'll need the relevant Social Security number or full name and state. Orphaned bank accounts. For money left at a FDIC-insured bank that has since failed, visit closedbanks.fdic.gov/funds. Search for unclaimed deposits at the National Credit Union Administration's ncua.gov for accounts at failed credit unions. In early 2025, more than 20 failed credit unions were listed as having held people's unclaimed funds. And for more about tracking down your unclaimed assets, you can visit aarp.org/unclaimed. Our next article suggests where to start if you're looking for someone to do an odd job around your home. And it was written by Jamie Seaton. Finding help for odd jobs. How to hire a handy person for small tasks around the house. 3/4 of older adults want to remain in their homes as they age, according to an AARP survey. But homes age too, and making even small repairs or doing routine maintenance may become physically demanding. You might need a good handy person, not a contractor who will only take on room renovations, but someone you can call upon to tackle small tasks. Alex Bandon of New York's North River Renovation Management, who has worked for This Old House, and Dosha Boylan of Handyman Connection of Golden, Colorado, each offer trips. Where to start? Watch YouTube videos of pros doing the job you want done. You'll then know what's involved, how long it takes, and what question to ask when hiring someone. Get recommendations. Ask at a hardware store. The staff should know trusted small contractors. Get on social media. Neighborhood groups are a good source, and Instagram is a hotspot for handy people to post photos and videos of their work. Go online. Search these sites for professionals. Angie, Home Advisor, Houzz, and Nextdoor, Boylan says. Also, check with the Better Business Bureau. If you've worked with a contractor on large-scale renovation, that person likely knows someone who can take on small jobs, Bandon says. Vetting. In online reviews, look for performance feedback. On-time arrival and good communications, Boylan says. Read the negative reviews, too, and pay attention to responses. Quality pros reply to bad reviews politely, with an offer to resolve the issue, Bandon says. When interviewing a potential hire, ask how they find their clients. If it's mostly by word of mouth, that can be a good recommendation right there, Bandon says. Ask to speak with other clients. Get a detailed quote, and make sure the pro has liability and workers' comp insurance, Boylan says. Our third article comes from the May-June edition of the Reader's Digest. It presents the story of an uninvited and unwanted guest that had taken up residence in an apartment while the owner was gone. This story was written by Bill Hangley, Jr. The squatter in my house. Your home is your castle, until some stranger insists it's theirs. When Genesis Gonzalez got home last June from a long visit with her family, 7 months pregnant and with a toddler in tow, all she wanted to do was relax. The stranger on her couch had other ideas. All of a sudden, they get a text. There's someone in our home, says her husband, James Gonzalez, who was coming home separately to the family's Salt Lake City apartment. It was a woman on our couch with a teddy bear watching TV. She said, "This is my house. Get out of here and take that baby with you." Genesis was stunned. The Gonzalez family lives on the top floor of a complex of about 700 units. Not exactly an easy target for break-ins. But as she approached the apartment door, she realized that something was amiss. The lock was missing. A dish rag was stuffed in the hole. She stepped inside and saw the apartment in shambles. As soon as a woman started yelling from the couch, wearing one of Genesis's shirts, no less, it became clear they'd been squatted. She fled down the hallway and called the police. But what would come next? Would the stranger be arrested? Would Genesis be arrested? Would she, her husband, and baby have a home to return to? Squatters or tenants? The term squatter covers a lot of territory. Sometimes it's an invited guest who won't leave. Sometimes it's an Airbnb customer who stops paying. Sometimes it's a desperate character hiding in a crawl space or a garage. Sometimes it's a well-meaning neighbor trying to make an abandoned space useful. However you define it, press reports suggest that squatting has proliferated in the last few years, becoming a particular concern in sprawling suburbs where vacant houses are common and can be easily located through online real estate listings. A 2024 member survey by the National Rental Home Council, an advocacy group representing landlords and property owners, says the highest number of recent squatting reports have come from the suburbs of Atlanta, Orlando, and Dallas. The Pacific Legal Foundation, which advocates for property rights, shows the number of squatting cases brought to court in Georgia alone jumped from just 3 in 2017 to 198 in 2023. Sometimes the very first day that property is listed, the squatters move in, says David Metzger, a real estate attorney in the Atlanta area who's handled dozens of squatting incidents. When he started his practice in 2011, squatting wasn't common. I had done 3 or 4 squatting cases until 2023, he says. Then all of a sudden in 2023, we saw an explosion of cases. Metzger thinks that the spike has been driven by a mix of factors, including rising housing costs, court backlogs related to COVID-19, and relatively low criminal penalties for trespass. Many would-be squatters have learned how to work the system, claiming to be a legal tenant and fending off police and court officials with false paperwork. They almost always have a fake lease. You can download them from the internet, says Metzger. The police come and they show the lease to the officer. And at least for a while, it can be enough to keep them from being booted out. Trespassing is a crime, and one truth about squatters is most get removed quickly. But another truth is that under the right conditions, that stranger on the couch might stay for weeks, months, or even years. In Houston, a real estate broker found the supposedly vacant home occupied by an entire family, including a fourth grade teacher. The family used a fake lease and other claims to fight eviction, and they didn't leave for a year. In Louisville, Kentucky, Daniel Toma allowed two friends to sleep in his garage while they fixed their car. The couple soon changed the garage's locks and made themselves right at home by installing cable TV service in their name. The legal specifics defining tenant vary from state to state. But generally, anyone who is invited to stay in a given property can become legally recognized as a tenant within a month or less. And tenants have right to due process before being evicted. This creates a challenge for police officers. When they're called to a home to settle a dispute between residents, it's not always easy to confirm who has what rights. For example, there's usually no fast way to confirm who signed the lease with whom. Police can't dial into some centralized database of landlords and renters. Sometimes police can quickly arrest and remove alleged squatters, usually because there's evidence of property crime. But whenever the situation is at all unclear, police refer the matter to housing court. These legal protections keep a tenant from being summarily kicked into the street on a landlord's say-so. But they can be exploited by bad actors, leading to seemingly absurd situations like the one in New York City last April, in which a woman named Adele Andalaro changed the locks on her home in Queens to get a squatter out. The squatter told police that he was a tenant with a lease, so Andalaro found herself arrested and charged with unlawful eviction. It took her a month to get the charges dropped and the squatter arrested. In the strict legal sense, squatters have no rights, whereas a tenant has all kinds of rights, says Metzger, from settlers to activists. Walking into your home and finding it occupied by a stranger is certainly cause for alarm. But it's important to note that not every squatter is malicious. Many see themselves as working for the common good. Mark Covington thinks of himself as a community activist. He leads the Georgia Street Community Collective, which runs a cluster of community gardens and youth programs in Detroit. The nonprofit owns over a dozen formerly abandoned properties, but it got started on land that Covington had no legal right to use. "I knew the city owned it," Covington says, "but I wasn't thinking about ownership. I wanted to make the neighborhood better. I wanted to grow vegetables." He's part of an American tradition that dates back to the nation's earliest days. The word squatter was coined in the late 1700s, when it was used by the Founding Father to derisively describe the landless settlers staking out claims on the frontier. These homesteaders created legal headaches for colonial landowners and often sparked bloody conflicts with Native Americans. In a letter to future President James Madison, Nathaniel Gorham of Massachusetts wrote that such squatters on other people's land might oppose the Constitution, as they were afraid of being brought to account. Among the first Americans to tangle with these sorts of squatters was George Washington, who discovered in 1784 that a feisty group of willful and obstinate sinners had built homesteads on his land in western Pennsylvania. He was able to evict them only after a 2-year court fight. Later, during California's gold rush, local landowners faced a flood of treasure-seeking squatters, whose demands for legal protections culminated in the 1850 squatters riot that left 4 men dead. By the time of the Great Depression, the word was used to describe impoverished workers living in squatter shacks and shanties. And by the 1960s and 70s, the term included the artists and activists turning abandoned buildings into squats. Soon, New York City became a hotbed for activist squatters. And it still is. "These are people who really care about the neighborhood," said Billy DiPiola, the director of Manhattan's Museum of Reclaimed Urban Space. 99% of the places that were squatted, they're now productive places that contribute to the community. So much so that 11 squatted buildings were legalized with the help of the city's Urban Homesteading Assistance Board, created in 1973. Also remaining on the Lower East Side are about 40 community gardens built on what had been vacant lots. "Community gardens are squats too," De Paola says. Most of the community gardens around here were city-owned land, and people just moved in. That describes what Detroit's Mark Covington did. The neighborhood was full of abandoned, trash-strewn lots. It was a mess. I decided I was going to start cleaning it up. I figured, nobody's going to dump on food, Covington says. It worked. Covington and his neighbors gardened on the city lot for 8 years before successfully buying it. I didn't know how to start a nonprofit. I didn't know how to do anything, Covington said. But he knew this much, land is power. We've got to take better care of it. You can't make me leave. But most squatters aren't in it to improve their communities. They're in it for themselves. That's what a family in Colorado Springs, Colorado discovered when a retiree named William Towns invited a homeless woman to stay in his home for a few days. When the days turned into weeks and Towns and his guests started having conflicts, his family stepped in. We said, it's been over a month. It's time to move on, says Alicia Jordan, one of Towns' two daughters. And she says, you can't make me leave. To Jordan's horror, she found out that the woman's boast was true, at least at first. The saga began when Jordan's father, 76 and recently diagnosed with dementia, met a woman in the neighborhood who was sleeping in her car. He's one of those types who loves to talk to anybody, Jordan says. He wanted to hear her story, so he invited her to have some iced tea. Eventually, Towns invited the woman to stay a few days while her car was fixed. He had no idea what he was getting into. Her boyfriend showed up that afternoon, Jordan says. My dad woke up one morning and her 15-year-old son was there with a cat. Then she just stayed. The situation quickly spiraled out of control. There were more and more confrontations, Jordan says. She really started to take over the house, yelling at him for not fixing the shower fast enough, like it was her house. Other problems emerged too. The woman's boyfriend wouldn't stop hanging around, making vague threats about reporting Towns to the police for building code violations like improper wiring. The couple parked two cars, neither one of which would run, on the property. Towns grew anxious and stopped taking his medications. But when Jordan called police about the problems her father's invited guest was creating, she discovered that as far as the law was concerned, the woman was a tenant until proven otherwise. Every time they'd come to the door, they'd say, "She's your tenant. This is a civil matter. You have to go to the courts," says Jordan. Things got so ugly that Towns' daughters moved their father out of his house and into one of their own. That left the woman, her boyfriend, her son, and the cat as the sole occupants of William Towns' home. They quickly made themselves at home, smoking and partying, welcoming guests, and even growing magic mushrooms, which is legal in Colorado, in the living room. For weeks, all the Towns family could do was watch it all on their security cameras. We're sitting there watching them live their life, going through our family belongings. It was heart-wrenching, says Jordan. The whole time, they're talking into the cameras, flipping us off. The family started formal eviction proceedings. The squatters appealed and stayed. The Towns family only ended the stalemate when they sought criminal charges of elder abuse. William Towns and his family testified that the squatters had threatened and mistreated him, backed by evidence in their cameras. The judge agreed and ordered the squatters removed. I cried at the moment the judge granted that order, says Jordan. That afternoon, the sheriff's department was there. They had to be out in 15 minutes. In theory, through what's known legally as adverse possession, it's possible for squatters to claim ownership of the property they occupy. But in practice, such a claim is all but impossible to make successfully. To win legal possession by squatting, it generally takes many years of continuous, open, and, critically, unchallenged use. Some squatters do attempt elaborate deed fraud schemes in order to literally steal a home. But squatting alone will virtually never lead to actual ownership. What squatters can do is leave behind a lot of headaches. In Colorado Springs, William Towns was finally able to return to his home after about a month living with one of his daughters. Between lawyers, cleanup, and a new security system, the whole affair cost the family about $6,000. A permanent protection order now bans the squatters from being near Towns, his property, or his dog. But the whole affair was hard on him, his daughter says. He couldn't sleep, he couldn't function, he was just so worried about his house, says Jordan. He thought he might lose it. Taking action. Outrageous stories like those of Townsend-Gonzalez families helped drive a surge of national news coverage and, in some cases, legal action. In several states, including New York, Georgia, and Florida, lawmakers have proposed or passed new laws empowering police to more quickly evict alleged squatters. The new laws do have some potential drawbacks, advocates say, by putting police in the position of having to settle competing claims on the spot. The risk is that somebody with a legitimate right to be in the property gets summarily removed without a right to defend themselves, says Eric Dunn, director of litigation for the National Housing Law Project, a nonprofit advocacy group. And sometimes, says Claire Herbert, a sociologist at the University of Oregon, squatter is just a convenient accusation. In Detroit, they set up a hotline so people could report squatters, she says. All that happened was that people were calling up to complain about their neighbors. Nevertheless, squatting does occur, and experts say the best way to protect your property from being squatted is to keep a very close eye on it. Unoccupied properties appear to be the most at risk for break-ins. That includes homes up for sale or rent, homes being renovated, or homes left vacant when an owner moves or passes away. For occupied homes, monitoring and reporting problems with tenants is essential. For example, if an invited guest or Airbnb tenant starts creating issues, landlords should document them right away. We learn from this process that you have to report everything, says Alicia Jordan. The Colorado Springs police know our address now. When police are called to a home and could determine that a crime was committed, like breaking and entering, they can act quickly. That's how it worked out for the Gonzalez family in Salt Lake City. As soon as Genesis Gonzalez discovered the woman on the couch, she called the police. When her husband got to the building, the squatter was already in handcuffs, sitting in the back of the squad car. The couple was told that the woman had admitted to talking her way through the building's front gate and then prowling the halls, watching to see which apartments were empty before breaking into the Gonzalez's home. She had stayed for about a week, the Gonzalez family learned. During that time, some of the property disappeared, presumably stolen. Baby clothes, kitchenware, and a valuable engagement ring. The squatter had stocked the fridge with TV dinners, apparently hoping for a lengthy stay. Instead, she left the Gonzalez family with about $13,000 in losses. She also left a week's worth of trash piled up everywhere. Building management replaced the locks in the apartment's front door. Friends helped Jamie scrub the apartment. And then they added some security, just in case. My neighbor's got a camera. We got a camera, says Jamie Gonzalez. If it happens once, could happen again. Our last article is from AARP and concerns financial planning for an individual whose family history includes longevity. It's from the April-May edition of the AARP The Magazine and was written by Jane Chotsky. Will she outlive her money? A single woman from a family with long lifespans is hoping for a definite answer. The problem. Ann Percio Pardes, 62, director of early childhood education at a religious school in Westchester County, New York, wants to retire in about 5 years. But given a family history of longevity, she's afraid she'll outlive her money, so she wants certainty. An accurate forecast for her retirement income. As a divorced single woman, she also worries about her long-term care and the cost of insuring it. I'm not sure my future old lady self can afford it, she told me. The advice. Creating a useful retirement plan requires a lot of detail. Things like your future monthly expenses and future investment returns. But that involves guesswork, and unexpected events can derail even the best guesses. Financial advisor Margarita Perry of RBC Wealth Management was up to the challenge. First, she inventoried Perry's assets and debts and got a picture of her cash flow. Perry's assets are chiefly $300,000 in a 403B retirement account, an $88,000 annuity, and about $150,000 in cash. Her only debt is her $350,000 mortgage. As for cash flow, Party spends about $4,600 of her $6,500 take-home pay each month. She saves most of the rest, partly for a travel fund. Her someday dream is an African safari. Her monthly Social Security benefit would be $3,600 if she claims at 67, or over $4,000 if she waits until 70. After Perry studied Party's investment, she had some questions. Would parties consider selling and renting instead of continuing to pay her mortgage? Yes. When might she need a new car? Not anytime soon. She plans to drive her 2018 Honda into the ground. Would she mind part-time work in retirement? She'd like it. She could easily imagine teaching. What does she worry about? Longevity. Perry's parents both lived into their 90s, though her mother had amassed a stroke in her 70s. It's impossible to predict the path of your investments, health, and personal goals over 30 years. So planners use computers and explore outcomes under different scenarios. What happens if you sell the house? Delay Social Security. Work part-time. Their software calculates how often your plan will succeed. For parties, success is not to run out of money when run through the numerous possible investment returns. Advisors differ on what rate of success to aim for. Perry regards success in at least 75% of the hypotheticals as a win. In all scenarios, Perry increased the stocks in Party's portfolio to about 60% and added more to her travel budget. You're young, Perry said. Finally, Perry said long-term care insurance wasn't out of reach. She thought Party's good health enabled her to buy a hybrid life long-term care policy. A suitable one might cost $12,000 a year over the next 10 years. The outcome. Newly confident that she can retire in 5 years if she wants, Parties is taking action. She's gotten two different quotes for the long-term care insurance. She's decided she'll sell her house as soon as 3 years from now. And wanting more than one-time financial checkup, she's hired a fee-only financial advisor, a woman who doesn't profit from any investment she recommends. Now that Parties has a plan, she says, I need someone to help me keep on track. Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Bob Decker, volunteer reader at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for listening. A reminder that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand. You can also take Sun Sounds with you on our stream, on demand, or on the Sun Sounds app on your smartphone or home device.